Yes, boys, the community football, it continues. I want to give a shout-out here as we start. The Guduga Youth Gala Day on the weekend. Now, 15 teams travelled out to this event. The under-17s, the under-15s and the Mungandai Grasshoppers there. They were really dominant out there. The best and fairest, the under-15s, Tyrell Lacey and Marion Ellis from the under-13s.
Yeah, I want to give a shout-out to Dino. The Mustangs had our first ever annual crab races, a good fundraiser there. Haddad Recreational Club was fantastic. The best thing about our sponsors, you know how hard it is in community rugby league, they actually won the race and donated all the money back. So it was a great day for the Stangs and it's going to help us a lot, you know, throughout the year. So thanks a lot to our sponsors.
What's going on with crabs
racing
these days?
What's the crab race?
How does a crab race?
Well, you bid on all the crabs, right? So we had all rugby league teams sponsored by certain things. You bid on it and then money goes into the pool, half goes to the club, and then they put the crabs out on the bowling greens and then they basically race. They race to the edge and then the winner is saluted.
I can imagine it would have been entertaining.
Well, you know what, too? The North Queensland Cowboys crab won. So, Benny Smith, there's one thing the Cowboys will win this year.
Yes, don't anything. Now, boys, I watched the football on the weekend. Had some great days out there. One of the highlights for me, the Bulldogs on Good Friday. I thought South would do a bit better, but the Bulldogs, I'm pretty impressed with what I saw. There's 65,000 people there. A bit of a record for the NRL rounds for club footy. But defensively, I thought the Bulldogs really good. Dominant win. Yep. But, T, you're not convinced. Tell us what you think of the Bulldogs so far this season.
Look, Dino, yeah, well, as you mentioned, the Bulldogs, great start of the season, like a golden ticket start, really good team, good defensive team as well. Yep. But where I see where the concerns are is in the spine, and it's the experience of the spine. If we compare them to other teams and other players and the standards, they're a little bit lower. And we can look at Connor Tracy, like him, I haven't seen him under pressure yet. He's playing really good footy, but I haven't seen him under pressure. And then Toby Sexton, like he's inexperienced in the side. Last year, you know, we've seen him play and I just didn't see that he lifted in those big games. Burton, you know, he has dominated some teams. Good kicking game, but is he like a Luai and a Munster? And then we go to Reid Marnie. Reid Marnie, a really good defensive player, you know, really good hooker. But when it comes to the creativity, is he like a Api Korosel? Is he like a Harry Grant? This is where the concerns are. And we can pick them apart a little bit because they're undefeated. They're going really well. Defensively, they're looking really sound. But when it comes to the experience of playing against the big teams, you know, back-to-back, if it's like going to be a Penrith, you know, and the next week against a Brisbane Broncos, this is where I want to see if they are legit a winning premiership team.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you there, T. I do have question marks around the spine, but the thing that comes to me is defence. Like, defensively and how they've been winning games, I think overall they're a really good team. We've seen the Dolphins on the weekend, how good they are individually. We see how good certain teams are individually. Their consistency and how good they've been defensively, it starts to sort of take away them questions if they keep beating these good teams. I don't think they've been fully tested yet. Probably the hardest game they played, Sharks at Shark Park, and they were pretty convincing that night. But like you said, you sort of ask the question, you think to yourself, at the end of the year, can you see that spine being able to go through a final series with that lack of experience? There's got to be some question marks there, but at the moment, they're sort of answering every challenge that's put in front of them.
Defensively, I find them outstanding. Cameron Seraldo, he's noted for his defensive efforts at Penrith previously and what he tried to do at the Bulldogs. The toughness is there. Like you said, the question marks are going to be asked around their point-scoring ability and their experience of their halves in the big game.
Well, you only have to look at it. Look, 65,000, it was a really good crowd. You know, they were defensively really good. But if you look at it, most of the game, South Sydney only had 30% of possession.
Yeah.
Like, there's the question marks right there. South are a depleted team. You know, there was a lot of soft tries that South let in. But if you're at 30%, you know, possession of the ball, like, you should be putting cricket scores on teams like South Sydney. But that's where my concerns are when it comes to mid-year to the back end of the year when it's, you know, all the teams are, you know, in fourth, fifth gear, ready to go.
It's an interesting round for the competition. I thought this competition is so even that you're seeing teams jump up some weeks, fall down again, people are losing to each other. The most impressive team for me on the weekend were the Dolphins.
Yes.
On the back of one of our favourite sons here at the show, and Joshy Kerr, who was outstanding in his 100th game up there, and he really ripped in. I'm really impressed with the halves there. I thought Katoa was outstanding. Yeah, Nick Arima continues to get better and better each week. And Hammer, we talked about him earlier in the year that he needed a bit of a break, but he's freshened up and he's hit some good form at the right time and he's entertaining to watch.
He certainly has. We'll start on Curry because he used to be a fan favourite here at the show. He came on when it was 14-2. And he single-handedly changed the momentum of that game. And it was one of them games, everything Curry did came off. And congratulations on his 100th game. But like you mentioned, some of them key players, you look at that Dolphins roster, Farnworth, like you were saying, Hamaso, you got the two halves, you got this forward pack that continues to work. But it was like on the weekend, things just come off. But they weren't flukes. It was like controlled. Even the flick passes were controlled. The one-on-one contest, like everything seemed to roll for them. And you could see Bellamy in the box sort of thinking to himself, what's going on here? Like, I can't really stop this, or I don't really know what's happening. It's just like they're too good for us today. So they need to just be consistent. They didn't start the year very well. They went through all that, you know, cyclone, having to travel a lot. Now that these guys are starting to get a bit of match fitness and they're starting to hit a bit of form, I honestly watched the game on the weekend and I sort of fell into the trap of saying, could the Dolphins win the comp? I was, and then I had to sort of pull myself back and say, let's see this for a 4 to 6 to 8 week sort of period. But they got the team to do it.
Yeah, like I think it came off special effort. To beat the Melbourne Storms, you've got to go with special efforts. And I've seen about 4, 5 or 6 special efforts that, you know, the Dolphins scored tries off. And to beat the Melbourne Storms, that's what you need to do.
Yeah. Now, the big news in all rugby league and probably the big news everywhere is around this Lachlan Galvin and West Tigers issue. I've never seen before such a hardline stance against the coach, against the club that's coming from a young 19-year-old. But this player-manager bias and their relationships with CEOs and coaches that player-managers, it's been around for a long time, but I've never seen it as bad as it is now, where it's causing all sorts of turmoil in clubs and it's really affecting the fans of the game.
It certainly is. And I think when you see any business and things that go on, the people who have the cards usually have the power, and that's usually what happens. I think with a lot of these player-managers, when you've got the players or even the coaches now, you are able to put pieces to the puzzle, or it gives you the negotiating power when you go to the table. A situation like Galvin too is after the Dylan Brown signing, it then gave all the power to these young halves that are coming through, because you're going to get signed on potential no matter what. And if that's a landmark sort of deal, it's like, well, I'm next in line. I'll go for the same sort of thing if I can get it. I think with Galvin too, it was clear to see that he just didn't want to stay at the Tigers. Like, there was a few different opportunities where he had, where they wanted to negotiate or different things, and it was always sort of wait, or, you know, and I'm actually happy that he's made a decision and he's going to move forward. So it gives the Tigers a chance to plan. But like you mentioned, Dino, something's got to be done, or there's got to be something looked into of what's happening in the background around these negotiations, because if you've got the chips in your corner, you put and hold the clubs at ransom to a degree, in my opinion.
Now, the NRL's looking into it, but it's hard to pick what to do here, because there's always going to be conflicts of interest with people in the media, people that work in the game, people that are coaching, and their relationships. What do you think, T?
Well, you only have to go back when we were playing. Like, the cap was around about $2 to $3 million, so there was only a small amount of managers or agents that were, you know, looking after the major rosters. Now the cap's at $13 million, so there's the agents have grown. There's a lot more agents in the game, but then you've got these agents that are actually monopolising clubs. They're going in and they're managing the coach, and they're managing, you know, 3 or 4 players in the side. So it gives them the power to move whatever players they've got under their books. And some of these agents have got about 300 to 400, you know, players under their books. So the more they get into the clubs and have relationships with coaches, or have coaches under their books and recruitment managers, that helps their players come in under the cap and for them to monopolise that club. So, yeah, I think the NRL are looking into it, and it's something important that, you know, there are some managers that are really good and looking after the players' interests, but there's a certain amount that are very strategic on how they monopolise a club.
Now, boys, we're joined by a bit of a legend now, Australian Kangaroos coach, the 13th immortal. He's a legend on and off the field for all these things that he's done in the game. We've got the great Mal Meninga join us. Mal, on the Skype. How are you, mate?
Good, thanks, Tino. Hey, guys, how are you?
Now, Mal, this is the first time you've been on the show. Tell us a bit about who you are and where you're from.
Sort of start teasing my memory a little bit, but born in Bundaberg, up in the White Bay area, spent a lot of my time at a place called Monto in central Queensland. And, you know, I grew up, my dad was worked in the sawmills as a benchman, and mum was a sort of domestic worker. But eventually found my way down to Brisbane in the police force. I joined the police force as a cadet. And then from there, obviously, a young fella called Wayne Bennett took me under his wing and said I could play a bit of rugby league, and rugby league's been sort of, you know, rugby league's taken up the rest of my life, really, and I've been lucky enough and privileged enough and honoured enough to be still involved with the great game.
You achieved a lot of amazing things. Now, mate, last week we raised the topic of the Indigenous players and their pathway to higher representative games. Now, to clear up a few things, it was to play against Tier 2 teams in competition, not to play against Australia, be a pathway to the Australian Rugby League team, and also to make sure that our best Indigenous players always choose to play for Australia first. It's very important, I suppose, the history and the relationship of Indigenous players and what they have with Rugby League in this country and that Kangaroos jersey. Tell us what you think about Indigenous players and maybe the opportunity that they could play against other countries, maybe on a Tier 2 level as international football games.
Dean, yeah, obviously I got bits and pieces around that conversation you guys had last week, and it got me thinking about, obviously, I mean, I think our great game is very inclusive. You know, we talk about all different nationalities. You know, we've got a multicultural, we just had multicultural round. I feel that our game leads the way, I reckon, in sport in general, but also society as well, around, you know, the way we sort of celebrate and acknowledge, you know, different cultures, and certainly the Indigenous culture is really prevalent in our society. So for me, you know, I grew up watching the great Arthur Beetz and played with great Arthur Beetz, and you know, the first ever Origin game way back in 1980, and he's certainly a person that I looked up to. And I mean, through my life, and, you know, rugby league is my community. I grew up with a lot of Indigenous peoples. You know, my cousins are all Indigenous as well. So, you know, so from my view on it all is that, and, you know, there's a greater conversation in national space and certainly Origin, and there's a greater conversation to be had around, you know, there's a lot of Pacifica take up 54% or 52% of our population. And we just got to sort of just settle down and just relax a little bit around, you know, who is eligible to play for Queensland, who is eligible to play for New South Wales, and then look at, I think, the tiers in the national space, and then look after that. I'm a big advocate, though, Dean, on you know, obviously having pathways and, you know, pathways into the representative scene, and I think that's what you're alluding to, you know, in your conversations in the past, where you look at, you know, an All-Stars or all Indigenous side playing, you know, against the Pacific Island teams in a Tier 2 tier competition. So, which I'm happy, you know, to obviously support, but I'm also happy to support an opportunity for, you know, like an Australian A type scenario that leads into a Kangaroo setup as well, and that could be, we've talked about it before offline around like Kangaroo. An emu side, an Australian emu side that's made up of, you know, all these other talented players that, whether they be Indigenous or non-Indigenous, they want to play for Australia.
Mm. Yeah, just touching on that, Mal, like, these conversations did come up, you know, due to the fact of eligibility, but also around, you know, the longevity around All-Stars and the question marks, especially with Vegas. So I think you make some really good points there in and around an Australian A, but I think, you know, if that All-Stars is moved or if it's taken, we're sort of just trying to look at other options in and around that, you know, that Tier 2 opportunity, or giving us some another platform if that, you know, All-Stars was taken away or the longevity was questioned or even the timing of that.
Yeah, I think the timing is really essential. The competition is so crammed, isn't it? You know, so we've got a lot happening in the pre-season. There's actually two in a competition where the winner takes some prize money. So I think, and I would like to look at a fact that we do an All-Stars, or even become, you know, the All-Stars become part of the PM's program, playing against Papua New Guinea at the back end of the year. I think that's a great window of opportunity, you know, for us to us to, you know, breed, I guess, the next generation of players. And obviously there's so many great Indigenous players playing in our competition at the moment. Just that would give them a really good window of opportunities to play representative football, you know. So, yeah, I just think that there's – if we want to sit down and just discuss how we see the competition and we have a look at all the demographics of our competition, I think at the back end of the year it could be a great opportunity for these type of concepts, these ideas to be thrown on a table and let's discuss it.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you've always had that respect about listening to things around our culture, and you've over the years you've implemented different things at Kangaroos and Jillaroos. What's your plans for the future around the cultural space and the cultural development of the Kangaroos and the leading the game as a leader that you are going forward?
Well, we recognise Indigenous culture on our jerseys already with our design. We got on the back when we ran the gathering and obviously acknowledging all our Indigenous history. I mean, I'd love to see us sing our national anthem. I think we're starting to obviously there's some concerns around it all, obviously particularly from the Indigenous players, but I'd love to see our national anthem, you know, sung in Indigenous language. I would love to see that. I think that's, but I look at the New Zealand national anthem and what they do, they sing it in Maori and then also sing it in English. I feel that hopefully there's an opportunity for us to do that down the track. I see us using our totems, which is the kangaroo and the emu and the boomerang. The boomerang, I think, is really important. Like when we line up against international teams, we get into that boomerang shape out of respect, obviously, for our Australian ancestral, you know, background, but also we believe in, you know, one of the stories I was told is that the boomerang is symbolic of respect. So we stand there and respect our Australian culture, our First Nations culture, but also we respect our opposition's culture as well. And we stand there in that boomerang shape to acknowledge that. But obviously we want to win the footy game. So we do all these totems and symbolic things that I think is really important to help us celebrate, you know, our Indigenous culture and our Australian culture.
Hey, mate, I look back at the history and we had Artie Beetson as the first captain of a national sporting team in rugby league, the highest representation of Indigenous players, both male and female, have been in our Jillaroos and Kangaroos. And we had Jess Skinner just coach the Jillaroos team over in Las Vegas. How proud of you of that heritage, that sort of that connection that our heritage and our culture has with rugby league at the top level?
Oh, it's so important, Dean. I think, you know, we... you know, I grew up with Indigenous players and, you know, admire their skills and, you know, you pick a few things up off them as well, you know. So, but I was lucky. I was sort of protected a lot from racism when I was a young fella because Dad was a highly respected person in the rugby league community, you know. So, and I use those sort of values to obviously, you know, from everything I do from a coaching perspective or, you know, how I present myself, you know, for the game. I think, you know, all these things come from, you know, all these, my background and, you know, and like I said before my introduction, you know, Arthur Beetson was, you know, one of my idols and I had the pleasure to play with him and he wrote a letter to me one time and he said, Mal, it was just through Origin. He said, Mal, you know, I'm so proud of you and, you know, and the way you look after your family, the way you look after your culture, because I'm an Australian South Sea Islander. He was so proud of me. And that was all he wrote on that letter. And that inspires me to do what I do today is be very inclusive, make sure that I do the right thing every time I make a decision. And then I want to obviously, you know, leave a legacy piece on our great game so that, you know, it's when I do leave it, I leave it in a better place.
Mal, we want to thank you for coming on the show. We always love that you get in here and share these ideas and put them on the table and have conversations, and it can only lead to better things, better outcomes for the game, and hopefully strengthen that Kangaroos jersey there for everyone. And really appreciate your time, mate, and thanks for coming on and joining us on Over the Black Dot.
My pleasure. I mumbled and bumbled my way, but I managed to get there. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mal. Some massive clashes here. The Rabbitohs versus the Storm in Melbourne. The Roosters versus Dragons. The Anzac Day clash is one that I always love. Across the ditch, New Zealand Warriors playing against the Knights. Good games everywhere. What are you looking forward to watching?
The Roosters and Dragons, man, that's the big one every year. You get the massive crowd, and it's always a tough game. And our Anzacs are honoured on that day as well. It's a fantastic day, Anzac Day, and it's a great round. And there's some other good games as well. Like, I know that usually the Warriors play against the Storm, but this year South have been involved as well.
Yeah, well, it's good to see that, the Knights last week, they were terrible, and they need to pick their game up, and I think it'll be a really good time to do it over in New Zealand.
Now, one clash that I'm looking forward to, the Sharks versus Tigers, two Indigenous fullbacks going up against each other, Jareem Buller, Will Kennedy. Will Kennedy in outstanding form at the moment, but Jareem Buller's another one who continues to grow week in, week out. Tell you, who wins this game, and who wins the battle out of the two fullbacks, and why?
Look, William Kennedy, like, he at the back, like, his broken play has been really good this year. And then Jareem Buller, like, he's young, he's fresh. I think last year, GI came in and mentored him a little bit. But I just feel like that kid, he's got a lot to, ahead of him. He's just an athlete, isn't he?
Yeah, he sure is. And there's some great matchups this week. The football's been crazy. So Anzac Day brings the best out of a lot of the teams. And it's just an exciting weekend. It's great that we can honour our Anzacs.